Money Matters is brought to you by Petso Financial Consultants. Their team of certified financial planners have been educating their clients to build confidence and find peace with their money for over 35 years. Also by Michelle Oliver of Finance of America Mortgage, lending products for all the stages of your financial life. By HH & Associates Accounting, we aren't just accountants, we provide solutions. By Mountain West Bank, your community bank, with 8 branches in the Treasure Valley. Now, here's Dave Petso on KIDO Talk Radio.
And blessed to be a part of your day, Kevin Miller in the morning on KIDO Talk Radio. Our great friend Dave Petso with us from the Petso Center. Petso Financial on Facebook and Twitter. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin.
So as we get ready to exit January and bring on February, your thoughts on the first month of the year when it comes to folks, 401ks, retirement funds, IRAs, a good month?
How about, wow, yeah, 7.5%, Kevin. We're not done yet. Tagging on to that, it looks like the market's going to open up today. But, you know, after a 20% gain last year, we're up already 7.5% in January. That's just incredible. What a start to the year. Tax reform, GDP numbers came out last week, and they were explosively good. The core, anyway, what's going on in America? You know, the headline number was a little misleading in the sense that it includes imports, exports, and those are very, very volatile. Kind of like we look at core inflation, we look at it instead of just this headline number. You know, because energy prices, things like that, fly all over the place. But core GDP is super strong, Kevin, and picking up pace. So it's been a great year in the economy, and certainly the stock market reflects that.
Well, when we take a look at what we can expect for the upcoming year, and you and I talk about this all the time, the dreaded correction,
right?
That eventually, historically, will
inevitably,
happen.
Inevitably, yeah. Yeah, we always get corrections, and I'm not sure why we fuss and worry about them, because trying to time those has of course been a fool's errand. But on top of that, the idea that okay, I'm pretty sure the market's going to correct. Let's just say you say that now, okay? So you move to the sidelines. At what point of correction do you get back in? Because there's so many people that, hey, you know, in 2016 I got out, and you know, and then the market corrected what, you know, 3%, 4%, 5%, and then ripped higher. At what point do you get back in? This is where people have so much struggle. Now I have to be right twice, which of course we know it's hard enough to be right once. Basically impossible. But let's just say
impossible to be right once.
Yeah, I mean, well, people can get lucky at it, but I mean, you know, when you've got people like Warren Buffett going, I can't time the market. You know what? That's good enough for me, Kevin. I just think that's a silly and foolish thing we try to do.
But is there something contrary to the market? I mean, remember when the market was kind of up and down, and the pleasure of being here for so long is I've seen the ebbs and flows. Remember when? Yeah. People were getting out of the market and they were buying rental homes.
Yeah.
Remember that? That was like the hot thing. And Time Magazine said, have we seen the end of home ownership in America? The American dream is over.
Exactly.
So, and I know where you're going to fall on this, but as far as any alternatives to the market.
Yeah. That's exactly why I think the market has so much strength. So let's kind of break it down this way and use this a real simple analogy, okay?
See, I was hoping to stump you, but apparently not.
Oh, you're
in rare form today. You're ready for me.
Okay. I'm ready. I'm rolling. Well-rested and boom, I'm on it.
Sure.
Now, so I always think of the world as like this giant bathtub of water slashing around, and you've got your different asset classes. You've got stocks, you've got bonds, you've got cash. And yeah, there's a core of real estate, but Kevin, when you're talking about investments that aren't liquid and real estate's not, now there is certainly within the stock market, there's lots and lots of real estate stocks. We utilize them, everybody does. And so they're in there, but it's not going to be one of your major three asset classes. So we've got cash basically for years has earned zero. We're now earning, you know, a quarter of a point or something on our cash, very little. But then you've also got bonds, and even though the rates have come up, they have destroyed any kind of gains because, of course, of rising interest rates. And they're still very low, below the inflation rate. So money, I think, is kind of still finding its way to stocks, Kevin, as the best alternative out there. And yes, we're going to have corrections, but I think that's why the corrections have been so shallow, is that people are looking for, I can get back in. Okay, down 2%, I'm in. Down 3%, I'll take it. And they're not waiting for the big 10, 20% corrections. to get money to work.
Sure, but it is kind of crazy when you think about people, you know, buying the penny stocks, and there's a lot of speculation going on that is very, very odd. I mean, everybody, you know, they get on their computers and they do the day trading stuff. Our great friend Dave Pezzo is with us here, the Pezzo Center, Pezzo Financial. Let's examine that a little, because we have people, you know, what, 2 or 3 years ago, day trading was the big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody, you know, instead of going out and working, they would sit by and they would, you know, monitor things, and they'd have Fox Business on and CNBC and whatever Jim Cramer said, trying to predict. What do you make of that? Does that type of, you know, get rich quick stuff really demean the business of, you know, properly retiring, of putting in the investment, mm-hmm. putting in the work, and having a trusted financial advisor?
It does. It's a great point. It's not so much it's demeaning, if you will, but it's just it misleads everybody. When you stop and you think about how do you get wealthy? Well, you save a little bit of money, and I do mean a little bit. It doesn't take much. You start early, and you don't go into debt. You live within your means. I'm sorry, that's just not going to make a whole series of novels. That's really simple, straightforward, and easy. And yet we turn this into something like, well, it's not going to work anyway, so I think I'll buy a lottery ticket. And so people do, and half of their money is gone. It's one of the worst things in the whole wide world to do with your money. I don't have any money. I can't really put any money in my 401k, but you can spend $20 a week on lottery tickets, which is, of course, absurd.
Hey, you can't win if you don't play.
Oh, Kevin. Oh, I can. You know what? I hear Jennifer at the office going, "Oh, he hates that." I know she is. If they want to tick me off, that's what they'll walk by and say that. Just rib me. It's like, yeah, I know. My chances of winning are the same as yours, and I don't play. You can't win these things. But anyway, my point is it takes us away from the truth. But you're these penny stocks, the day trading, the chase of some kind of a quick get-rich-quick dream, instead of saying, here's my deal. I'm going to put away $100 a month, and then I'm going to, as I get a raise, I'm going to take another $10 of that, and I'm going to keep going. And then I'm going to save it for decades. I'm going to have a couple $1 million in retirement. And that's assured. That's the way to play it. Instead, we're going to buy penny stocks. You know, remember the Wolf of Wall Street. That's what they did, was play on people's greed. And of course, that is the wrong direction. And it's just misleading for people. And I'm very, very sad that people feel that way. They feel like they've missed out. Now they have to hurry, or they don't play. They spend all their money when they're young and get into debt, and then it's a struggle for them to ever get going, and their years run out. It is a difficult thing, but it's not. It's simple. It's easy. But we have to stay away from what the mainstream media, what our society, if you will, says about getting rich. Getting rich is not the destination. It is where you're going, but the journey is what counts. And when people are just putting the money away on a regular basis, living their lives within their means, they're happier. They make choices that they want to make. They're not just flying around. It makes a lot of, it really pulls everything together in a person's life.
All right, Dave Pezzo. By the way, the phone number is here, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Our great friend Dave Pezzo is with us, the Pezzo Center, Pezzo Financial. Let's take a look at an interesting story from the Statesman today. And they're saying that most people in Ada County and Canyon County and the Treasure Valley aren't selling their homes because they're watching too much reality TV. They're remodeling instead. And I go back to what a great story Dave Ramsey told me. We were doing an event together, and it was funny because, you know, you think of Dave Ramsey as this big national guy, and when he comes here, it's like 5,000 people. Well, I was on his flagship station, and so it was funny. I got to speak, then Dave Ramsey got to speak, and then Phil Valentine got to speak. And so, you know, you're kind of, you know, you when you hang out with Warren Buffett and Paul Allen and all these guys, you're in the green room. So, you know, he goes, yeah, my wife Sharon, she wants to buy a new house. But you know what? I talked her into remodeling. He goes, because you save so much money when you remodel as opposed to, you know, buying a new house or, you know, even if you put an addition on. So of the 1,391 homes listed, 854, more than 3 in 5, were newly built, compared with 537 existing homes, according to the Boise Regional Realtors. It was the fifth time in 2017 when new homes exceeded used ones, until December 2016. That had not happened in 10 years, for which realtors have data. So it gets down to this. And I'm wondering where you think historically we are in our housing market here. Sales surged again in 2017. The median price for new homes in Ada County. Want to take a ballpark on that?
17%.
Price?
Oh, price. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. 300,000.
Close. $339,241, up 8.2% from 2016. You remember when they were cut in half, almost cut in half, a few years ago. Now, the median price for used homes in Ada County, I like what they say, used homes, pre-owned homes.
Pre-owned, yeah.
What do you think that was?
280.
$247,500, up
8%.
That's
a big difference, yeah.
Canyon County medians, $236 for new homes, $172 for used. I can't believe they're calling homes used.
Yeah.
Right. But again, we see this market going and going and going. And, you know, I get the thing from my my mortgage guy. My home keeps going up and up in value. How real is this, do you think?
Very, totally real. People are moving here. The demand is there. The prices of homes in other places where they're moving from is much, much higher. It's just simply, and when you think about how much it costs to build a new home, the impact fees that are going to all of the local municipalities on top of the price of the land, building costs are going up, 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 and they are really going up on the labor side because they can't find enough contractors, right, to get out there and laborers to build these homes. So they are really having to pay up all the way around. And although we are more productive, they can put up a house easier with less people, it still is causing the prices to go up, Kevin. So on new houses, I still think, relatively speaking, Idaho's a bargain.
Let's go to the phones and we go to Blair in Boise on KIDO Talk Radio with Dave Petso. Good morning, Blair.
Hey, Kevin. Good morning. Hey, Dave, you brought out something earlier, and I just wanted to get your feedback. Do you think that there's an issue with the consumer debt level in the United States, and does that affect any of the investing in the market? Thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you. Great point, and always a concern, because if the consumer's tapped out and if they're high in debt, at some point in time, typically people wake up, grow up, however you want to say it, and they spend money appropriately. They don't just spend it. They don't just pull the credit card out. They figure out that we have a problem here. I've got to get this under control. So it slows down consumer spending. So if we get too much debt, so far we're fine. And when we think about how fast GDP is growing and the overall household debt levels are pretty good. But you're right. There are certain areas we have to watch for. And I want to be careful with this because a lot of people pull this completely out of context and then blow up the chart. Now, and what I mean by that is you've got two areas. We've got used car loans, right? We've got car loans that are going bad. So we've got consumer debt exploding on that side and bad debt both. So you'll see charts on that. And you'll also see the explosion, of course, in student loans. And when you pull those two together, it's a small part of the overall debt in our country. So again, don't focus too much on those. We want to watch it. But don't let people show you just those charts and say we're completely out of control. We're all, it's all going to heck in a handbasket, and we're all going to die. That's usually the argument, and has been for years, where they pull those charts out. So look at it in the context of the overall ability to pay for it. The consumer is doing well; they're doing better than they were before. But yes, consumer debt is growing again, and we do want to keep an eye on it. So far, so good.
Let's coming up next, we'll talk a little bit about student loans and the five trends that could define your money in 2018 with Dave Petso, Kevin Miller, KIDO Talk Radio. And our great friend Dave Petso with us. Hey, what do you make of startups? Are you a fan of startups? The reason why I say is a big story last week. Vince McMahon had the World Wrestling Entertainment, World Wrestling Federation, did the XFL many years ago. And it shows you just how crazy the sports media has changed. I remember covering that, I guess, in my 30s or 20s or whatever. And there are many people that are on national sports things that have never heard of the XFL. So basically, it was an alternative to the NFL. And now, all of a sudden, he's bringing it back. He grabbed $100 million of his WWE stock, cashed it out, formed an entertainment company to make this happen. He's going up against the NFL. Now, a lot of people say, why would he do that? But you could say the same for innovators like Microsoft or Apple. What do you make of that?
I think it's awesome. It's amazing to me when you stop and think about it. How about how crazy it is that a company like Netflix is going to send discs to your house and compete against Sony and all the major stations and Blockbuster.
Yeah,
exactly.
I remember that.
I mean, who does that? I mean, that's crazy, right? Who invents a little phone 10 years ago that changes the entire world? It is, Kevin, you're right, and innovators do that. And when you think about the cost of content and how difficult it is and you know, to create unique and desired content, it's an amazingly difficult thing. And I'm not a wrestling fan, all those things, so I really don't care about this guy, and I love it. I love what he's doing. I love that he's a disruptor out there, and it doesn't mean he's going to be successful. I would think odds are against him being successful, but good for him for trying and taking his time and talent and treasure and going out and trying to make it happen. That's what entrepreneurs are. I love them. I don't know how people can't just love them, and when they're successful, applaud them, and when they're unsuccessful, because most are, help pick them up and let them get going and give them a new dream. It's amazingly risky what people do to go into business, and they just give up their life to try to throw deep for something that is really beneficial to society. So I applaud them. I don't wish him ill. I wish him absolute success.
And let's go to some of the trends that will impact your money here at KIDO Talk Radio. From Money Magazine, U.S. interest rates rise. If you smell inflation in the air, you better know than most people. The Consumer Price Index has risen just 2% over the past 12 months. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, that's well below the long-term average of 3%. Nevertheless, economists expect the Fed to nudge short-term rates higher at least twice more in 2018, bringing in the key short-term federal funds rate to just below 2%. What does that mean? What's the translation?
The translation is that interest rates really are going to go higher because of the concern of inflation. I am not. The Fed so far is not overly concerned, but they are a little bit behind the curve, meaning they are just trying to play catch up with this incredible growth we're seeing, Kevin. You know, we talked about this and how the economy is truly booming. It really is. The core of it is on fire. And we're seeing core GDP exploding higher like we haven't seen in over 10 years. It is a reflection of the overall economy that the interest rates are going higher. So don't buy bonds is what that message is right there. But further, I think the Fed very likely could be raising rates way more than twice just to play catch up. Three or four times, in my mind, is more likely.
Dave Petzl joins us as we continue on here. Let's look at economies overseas rebound.
They are. This is a global growth situation. I can't think of her name right now. The French lady that is the head of the IMF, she was talking about the fact that the U.S. policies, especially the corporate tax cut, is going to help boost global growth. Isn't that interesting? Not just U.S. growth, but global growth in changing policies and directions for other economies around the world. But we are now seeing emerging markets really catching fire, not just their markets. The actual GDP is growing. And also, of course, even outdoor museum Russia, Europe, is actually now becoming a growth place. This is the first time in literally decades, Kevin, that they're accelerating rather than decelerating in growth. So I think we are seeing a global growth that could get near 4% GDP this year. That is an astounding number that really all those folks around Obama and Obama himself always said we were in some kind of a secular slowdown. You remember that?
Right.
Yeah, that this is just the way it is. It's a secular malaise. There's nothing I can do about it. I'm the genius, but I can't. Yeah, well, as soon as the genius left, we're now getting global growth that is far in excess of where it was or thought it could be, according to the progressives.
We continue on with Dave Petzl, taking a look at some more trends that impact your money. Assets revert to the mean. In the long run, two things are certain. One is that we're all dead, as economist John Maynard Keynes pointed out. And eventually, outperforming and underperforming investments will return to their long-term average performance. Your thoughts?
Not really true. It is true in a broad sense that the overall market will average 10% over long periods of time. That's what it does. But when we take back and look back 10 years, we're actually below that trend line. So what period of time are you going to be measuring? The reality of the market right now is that there are winners and losers, as there always are. This is not new, where the market or capitalism has creative destruction. where companies that make a crappy phone like BlackBerry get annihilated by a great company like Apple and Samsung. And this goes on and on and on throughout every industry. And this creative destruction has meant that companies that are on the cutting edge are growing very fast and do much better than 10% a year in growth. And companies that are doing poorly, they don't do as well, or eventually they might even die. And that's okay, too. That's the way the markets work. And overall, the average has been good. But I would not say that those underperforming investments, the ones with really bad companies, I wouldn't go buy them necessarily because they're underperforming. Or would I kick out Google, Amazon, Netflix, and Apple and all these others that are just dominating the world? They will continue to dominate until something changes. And just because you say that things return to the norm or mean doesn't mean that next year is when they return to the mean.
We continue on with our great friend Dave Pezzo, Kevin Miller in the morning here at KIDO Talk Radio, talking a little bit more about money. Healthcare remains healthy.
Now, I'm assuming they're saying that healthcare, keep investing in healthcare. Is that a fair?
If any sector of the economy should have been roiled last year, it was healthcare. Republicans right. mounted an unsuccessful attempt to repeal the Affordable Care Act and then continued its efforts to chip away. Nevertheless, healthcare funds soared, posting an average gain of more than 20%.
Yes, and what is actually interesting in that is that, again, a little political bias there, that the Obamacare somehow is good for healthcare companies. It's good for some, but that's what government does. It picks the winners and losers. Kevin, you are a winner. Kevin, you're a loser. We don't like you. New administration, and you're out. And that is true all across healthcare, where there are some winners and some losers. And whether the Republicans are successful in repealing or not, here's my point. There will continue to be winners and losers within healthcare. And I would focus on biotech, pharmaceutical. I know everybody hates them. That's fine. Okay, go ahead and continue to hate them. They're costing you 8 to 10%, which is what it's always been for pharmaceuticals, 8 to 10%. And by the way, all the people around you, they're alive because of those really crappy, and get angry at Merck and all the companies, those drugs that you're taking, you're still alive or you're feeling better than you would otherwise. That's what those companies do. And as far as really seeing those prices come down, I don't see that at all, Kevin, because that is the lowest cost in all of healthcare is pharmaceuticals, the lowest cost of how we get better. It's a lot cheaper than putting people in the hospital.
Dave Pezzo, we always appreciate you. Thank you.
Appreciate you, Kevin. Thanks a lot. Have a good day.
You too. You're listening to Kevin Miller on KIDO Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Money Matters. Of course, we just finished up with Kevin, and in the next hour, I have got a local CPA, Dave Hutchins, is going to come in, and we are going to be talking about the new tax bill. A lot to it, of course, and a lot to be written still, but we're going to find out more about that. I just thought it was timely. Obviously, we're all doing our taxes, but this tax bill is so huge for the overall economy, the impact it has on individual taxpayers. It's just something we need to better understand as we're planning our own personal finances. So I wanted to grab this opportunity to do that. And since we only had about 20 minutes, I wanted to spend time today talking about what's going on in the market. And not because we want to talk day to day. You know me better than that. We don't talk about the market day to day. That's ridiculous. We don't do that. What we want to do is talk about it in a long and a broad sense. But when markets sell off and they sell off for no apparent reason, it's worth discussion. It's worth understanding. What is going on? Is there something to worry about? Well, there's always something to worry about. But trying to understand this market and what we're having sometimes is a fool's errand. There's really no point in trying to understand, well, the market is selling off for this reason, for that reason. Oftentimes, it just sells off. Seriously. Or it's on pause. Then how much are we going to sell off? I don't know. But here's the deal. What it's going to do is it's going to start popping up all those websites again. You know, they're going to talk about the dollar's in decline, that interest rates are spiking, that inflation's out of control and you need to own some gold. All of those things are going to be, again, the negativity pimps are coming. And also because of the volatility, as you all know from last week and many weeks in the past, we talk about the fact that the annuity pimps are going to come out too. And they are going to come out in big time, right? You know, you don't want to play in the Wall Street casino and things like that, right? In other words, you don't want to make any money. Because it is true. And I broke that down. If you have any questions, I broke down all the reasons why. I gave an actual annuity contract and took the numbers apart. And it's frightening. I mean, it is just so frighteningly bad. It's frighteningly a ripoff. And I honestly don't understand why these are legal in the state of Idaho. I don't understand why they are. I don't understand why the Department of Insurance thinks it's okay for senior citizens to be taken advantage of. But they apparently do, because they have the power to stop these things. They absolutely do, because they don't serve any positive purpose, unless the positive purpose is lots and lots and lots of commissions for the people that pimp them. And it's okay for them to exaggerate and say you get market participation. You guys know that. That's not true. But you see, what this does, any kind of, you know, we're down a whopping, you know, like 3%. Whoo, golly. Oh, my. After a 30% gain, I don't want to give up any, right? We don't want to give up any. But what it does is it gives a little juice to those negative sellers, because fear sells. Now, let's talk about this correction, because is it going to go deeper? I don't know. But corrections are normal. Normal. Absolutely normal. We haven't even had a 5% correction since Brexit. That's ridiculous. I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous. I don't know if this is going to 5%. I'm sure lots of people over the weekend will tell you why it's going to be terrible. And if we go to 5, it's going to 10 for sure. All of that is true in the press. It happens every time. When we're down 5%, it looks terrible. Nobody invests. When we're down 7%, oh no, it's going to 10. And then all of a sudden it turns around and rips higher and you miss again. Happens all the time. I don't know why we think we have to time this game. Peter Lynch, John Templeton, Michael Price, Warren Buffett, all say in so many ways, absolutely no equivocation, we cannot time the market. I know. You got this, though. You're going to wait. You're going to wait it out. Why? When it's such an easy game. But corrections are normal, and I think that's just something almost in investing. You have to just kind of put it up like on a bulletin board, right? Yeah, I know. It's time for me to do my 10 investment commandments again as a reminder for everybody, and I will. I just realized I haven't done that in like a couple of years. But when we think about corrections being normal, it's like you need to have that on a bulletin board. Like, this is normal. It doesn't mean it's caused by anything. It doesn't mean we should be concerned about it. It doesn't mean it's going to go to a certain depth, certain length of time. It's just normal. It's on pause. Right now, there happen to be more people taking profits after a humongous run. I mean, a historic run. And this is a reason to do what? Dump your money into equity index annuity, guaranteeing not to work and tying your money up for the rest of your life? Great. Why would I do that? No. But you're going to see more and more ads about that. A correction's coming. This is something we always want to remember. Now it's here. Is it here? I don't know. Technically, do we have to go down 5% to call it a correction? I don't know. Do we have to go down 10? I don't know. There's different definitions. Does it really matter? It's coming. Even a bear market is coming. We just don't know. Now, bear market, we have a definition for it, 20% or more down. Someday. You know, they're inevitable. They're inevitable as the sun coming up. At some point, the problem is we just don't know how long it's going to be before we have one. And they don't announce them. They really don't. So we have a correction in the midst of good news. Now, this is what's weird for most people. It's hard to understand that when we have good news, why would the market sell off? Today, Friday, they just announced an unbelievably good jobs report. It's remarkable, frankly. Remarkable. And again, leads us further from, quotes, a recession, which is what causes most, not all, bear markets. And I'll talk about in our final segment here, I'm going to talk about kind of the characteristics that tend to make up a bear market. what we have to have in place to cause a bear market. It's not easy to pinpoint, but there are certain things that are not anywhere in sight right now. We just announced 200,000 new jobs in an already tight labor market. Huh. Why? Because the economy is booming. Business is booming. Business is confident. Record confidence levels. Record consumer confidence levels. Not record consumer confidence, nearing record consumer confidence, but business confidence, all-time highs. So business is hiring. Business is expanding. Business is in love with what's going on. And now it's spreading globally, which means our larger companies that sell globally and who just had a massive tax cut are reinvesting and expanding because all of their end markets, including global, are growing. We're becoming so rich. Oh, it doesn't feel it, or somebody else has more than you, and so now we can't be content with the fact that you have more than you ever dreamed you would have. I know, that's kind of the unfortunate thing about today's world, isn't it? Nobody's content. Richer than you ever thought you would be, but yeah, somebody else has more, so hey, I don't think I have much. It's a weird thing that we're going through, no doubt, no doubt. But we'll talk about those components to a bear market. So we enter in this phase now where we're looking at tremendous stock buyback programs. Good news. Money being returned to shareholders. Great news. Earnings numbers are great, generally. I mean, there's one or two over here. You could throw a hickey on one or two. Oh, iPhone sales didn't quite exceed expectations. Okay, whatever. Lots of stuff is being sold by lots of companies, and earnings are great, cash flow is phenomenal, and businesses are expanding. This is all good news, period. Period, exclamation point, underline, however you want to say it. This is good news. So why does a market correct? We find reasons why, but here's why. There are more sellers and buyers. There's people that are just like, I don't know. We could get a little inflation. True story. Wages have gone up more than since the Great Recession. Imagine that. Imagine that. I mean, there's nothing but momentum building, right? This president's agenda is phenomenal for business. I mean, you might hate the guy. Don't care. From a business perspective, love, love, love. Everything he does, love, love, love. And businesses are loving it, and they're expanding, and the confidence is growing. Are we going to have inflation? Of course. Of course we are. That's part of it. Hyperinflation? You'll see lots of things talking about it, but really? Do you really think that's what's going to happen? If you want to live in the doomsday world, of course you will begin to think that. You'll find people that agree with you. The same people that have agreed with you since QE1 came about. We're going to have a flood of money. That's it. It's over and done. We're out. Boom. That's it. Hyperinflation. Buy gold. Sorry. Not a good idea. Was it? So we've got this in place right now. We've got great job growth, great wage growth for the first time. Confidence is rising. This is good news. And corrections are normal and occur for absolutely no reason, but we make up reasons. Well, it could be inflation. Okay, it could be. And there's no reason to think that we shouldn't have a pause in an over 30% move since Donald Trump became president. A pause that refreshes. And it does. Don't let this stuff scare you. It's meaningless. It really is meaningless in a long-term portfolio. Are you thinking long-term? Or do you fuss with every single little, and I want to underline this and express it again, normal, 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 absolutely is certain to occur over and over again all the days of our life. Correction. Normal. On our way. Again, to all-time highs. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk again about what causes bear markets. I mean, is it just this thing, stocks go too high? Yeah, that's part of it. Could be. We'll be right back. Hello, and welcome to the special edition of Money Matters. Remember, in the next hour, I'm going to be talking with Dave Hutchison, who is a CPA, and he's going to be breaking down a bit of the new tax law. We're all preparing taxes, but more importantly, this is historic. It is. This is a historic change in the way we have taxes. Historic for business and historic for small business. It's still being written. The rules are still being written. I get it. Okay? But we know a lot, and we're going to go ahead and dive into that in the next hour. Okay? Now, coming back to what we were talking about here, about this market and whether we have a little correction here and how deep the corrections go and when's the next bear market coming and things like that. Look, nobody can time the market. And I'm not sure why there's this constant hunt. I just don't know. I really don't understand human nature in this way. It's been one of my great puzzles, if you will, for over 35 years in this industry, as to why people behave so badly with investing. Why do they fuss about things that make everybody rich? Their parents, their grandparents, their great-grandparents, all people all the time over long periods of time get rich when they buy and hold the great corporations of the world. I'm not saying it works most of the time or like a little more than half or sometimes, and if you do this and do that and do it just right. No, I'm talking about you just buy and you stupidly hang on, no matter what all the mongrels are out there saying. They're just, you know, oh, you're going to run for the hills. It's a giant casino. You need to buy my equity index annuity so I can send my kid to college. All that stuff is going on, bah, 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 just burying us all the time. I get it. But why don't we just stop and reflect? Wait a minute. Hold on. Time out. Let's see. Market's gone up 10% since 1926. It's gone up 10% per year for my 30-year-old daughter's wife, for my life, and for my grandpa's life. Oh, like weird. It's always 10. And what we get for 10, we have to put up with one thing. Temporary price movements. Temporary price movements. Also your advantage, but that's enough for another time. We all know that anyway. But I know you, it's not to your advantage because you think it's going to freak you out. Oh, I got to hurry tonight because the market's down. Let's go find out how much money I lost. How does that help you roll into the weekend? Really? Come on. Stop it. If the market's down, the market's down. What does that mean to you? Did the dividends stop being paid on your portfolio? No. No. It didn't. What does it mean? The income ceases? The corporate bonds stop being paid? No. Not at all. It means we have a temporary, certain to occur, price difference. Let's talk about bear markets. Now, nobody can predict a bear market. I mean, you cannot. But typically, here's where they occur. They occur during recessions. There are four components, okay? And normally, you have to have at least two of these, okay? At least two. A recession, a spike in commodity prices, have an overly aggressive Fed, and you have extreme valuations. Now, let's break it down. Are we in a recession? Does it look like we have a recession? Is it possible for a recession right now? I mean, possibly like the early time. We haven't quite turned negative. Really, the GDP growth is accelerating. We've got the employment numbers. They're off the charts. We're so far from a recession. Okay, now, there's only been two bear markets that have occurred without a recession. Okay, but there are two. So it's still possible. Have we had a spike in commodities? No. Mm-mm. Copper, iron, even oil. Although it's come back up, oil has. It's come up off of the bottom, right? We haven't had a spike in commodities at all. How about an aggressive Fed? No, they're still accommodative as heck. I mean, they really are quite accommodative. Well, but they're raising rates. No, but they're not raising rates like every meeting. They're doing it measured, slowly, and they have a huge balance sheet. There's just, the world is a sloshing with money, just sloshing with money. So we do not have an aggressive Fed. What about extreme valuations? Now, you can argue the market's a little high, a little, but not extreme. So we have none of the four in place. Now, that's not to say that we couldn't have, for the first time since the 1920s, a bear market that has none of the components to it, or that we get an exogenous event that causes any of the above. But we clearly don't have the normal conditions for a bear market. I mean, any bear market that we've ever had. So when we hear people talking about the coming collapse and this and this and this, you're really going to try to time, let's say, you're finally going to buy Apple. You're finally going to buy a Google. You're finally going to buy just a good and solid mutual fund. And you're going to try to figure out how it might go 1% or 2% down more, or it's going to break your heart if you buy today and it goes down a couple percent more. Stop it. That's not how it works. Market doesn't wait for you. If you wait, it will not work for you. It won't. These corrections are normal, and they pass. Next hour, we're going to be talking taxes. Please stick around. Thanks for tuning in. Hello, and welcome to a special edition of Money Matters. I'm here with Dave Hutchins. I always want to say Hutchison's, but it's Hutchins. Right?
Hutchinson.
It is Hutchison.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Sorry about that,
That's
Dave.
That's all right.
I mean, how long have we known each other? I can't get your last name right. All right. For some reason. Anyway, with HH and Associates here in Boise. And also, I have, for full disclosure, my accountant as well. So I appreciate the work you guys do. I really mean that. You guys are very, very professional. I've been other places and I'm very, very pleased. Thank you.
Good. Thanks
for your professionalism. At any rate, we're here. Why? Because it's tax season. One. Two, this is a huge change. This is monumental. I mean, we've not seen anything like this since Reagan, have we?
Absolutely right. I think everybody's excited about it. Finally got done. We talked about it before, I think, on the other show of whether it was going to happen or not.
Right. But
it has. It's here.
Defying all of the pundits' predictions that there's no way it was going to pass, it did. We are here.
Yeah, I'm glad to see it. I mean, it is better late than never, but most of the stuff takes effect into 2018, other than one minor item, which is bonus depreciation back to September 2017. But by the time all this rolled out, there was no decision-making or planning that could be done for that particular issue. So,
gotcha. So we are, but we're here, and it is taking full effect for calendar year 18.
Correct.
Yeah, and none of this phase in. The only thing we're talking about here is possible phase outs of some of the provisions in 5 years, correct?
Yeah, that's I think one of the nice things about it is old rules are old rules. If you're still applying, it's just everything after the effective date. Much like the personal residence debt limit, they dropped it from $1 million to $750,000. For all those folks that have a $1 million acquisition debt, the rules do not change. It's only if you were to go out and buy a new home after the effective date.
So the fact you have a large mortgage prior, you still get to deduct that.
Correct.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Gotcha. So let's break this down because, of course, you have. I know it's all politics. I get that. Okay. This is just really, I suppose, from a liberal perspective, if you just say it enough, it becomes true, even if it's just absolutely not true. But I think I want to. I instead of me just saying this is ridiculous. Is this a middle-class tax cut, or is it a tax cut for the wealthy?
Dave, to be honest with you, the numbers are going to show, but what I'm seeing is I think it's a tax cut all the way around, to be honest with you. What it was set up to do was incentivize job creation, right?
Yes.
And so what you're seeing right now in the economy, I believe, is and it wasn't known up front. It was a question of whether it would happen or not. But big corporations at 21%, instead of just going directly into infrastructure, they're passing it out. They're doing $1,000 bonuses and so forth, giving pay raises. As you kind of go down the middle class, what I call the middle class, I think they will still see some adjustments, not as heavy, not enough potentially to go out and say, hey, I'm going to hire 10 people kind
right.
of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And even on the smaller end, I think with the scaling or the broadening of the brackets is going to put, you know, anywhere from $1,000 to a couple of $1,000 reduction in withholding, for example, on wages that is going to go into your net paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have that trickle down, which is going to be, I believe, pushed back out into the economy.
All right, right. Now, when you say all the way around, because when I looked at my taxes, they weren't going down without the deductions for state taxes, things like that.
Correct. But I still think there's a little bit because of the broadening of the bracket. So you go from zero to 450 in the old regime that
right.
tops out at 39.6%. Now we're going from zero to 600,000 of taxable income, and it tops out at 37%. The other thing that I see, like in particular your case, is alternative minimum tax.
Right.
They bumped double the exemptions, and they've increased the phase out to $1 million. And so I think you're going to see that there will be some, but again, not huge dollars, but I think there will be some relief.
Right, right. Now, for those people that aren't paying any taxes, sorry, you didn't get a tax cut. Weird. If you're not paying taxes, they didn't cut your taxes. Weird. But that isn't in play. But for middle class people, my daughter and I had a wonderful discussion. Now, of course, she's a Seattle super liberal. Unfortunately, she's been taken to the dark side and lives in Seattle. And so we all know what happens if you live in Seattle. And so, but so let's just say they're not real Trump fans at this point. But it is astounding when you take a tax-free state or a low-tax state, like Washington State is, and then take their middle class income and drop the rates down. It's astounding. Plus, on top of that, her husband's self-employed, and he gets what, a 20% deduction? Is that
right?
Yeah,
20% deduction. Now, there's a lot more involved in this, and there's still plenty of guidance to come out on this. But kind of to break it down for you, they put forth, if on a single return, your income is about $157,000. I'm going to use round numbers.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And you got to look at your individual return. You can qualify for a 20% deduction against the taxable income on your personal return. It's not done at the entity level, but on your personal return. That is for partnerships and S corporations. On the married filing joint side, it's as high as $315,000 to qualify for that. Otherwise, they got a phase out calculation. Mm-hmm. And then if you're over $207,000 and $415,000 on the upper end, you're really not going to get anything from it.
So it's not, again, once again, this is not tilted towards the rich people who are going to create all these entities that people are talking about.
Correct.
It just isn't going to happen. They can't get around this. Is that correct?
Right.
I'd have to say when I was looking at this, and I really want your feedback on this, when I was looking at some of the provisions in the tax bill, okay, and again, I'm not a CPA, and I certainly didn't dig that deep, but I was stunned to find how smartly they did this to circumvent people figuring out how to get around certain things, like me setting up three or four entities and being able to try to get around that type of thing. It's hard to do.
Yeah, there's obviously a lot of guidance still to come out, but mm-hmm. they do it on, you got to aggregate your qualified business income. So it takes into account all of your trade or business income. You have to be careful on the real estate front. There's a lot of people that still don't understand the material participation rules, and actually being a real estate professional to qualify that income for that. Your standard rental net income where you're just an active participant, that still isn't going to qualify. It has to meet trade or business definition. There will be strategies, I think, where it'll come back to is the individual return.
Right.
One thing you got to think about here is it's on a return basis. So if you have a husband and wife who have separate businesses, there may be a reason now to file married filing separately to get that 20% deduction. Mm. Now, there's still a lot of guidance, and maybe they put a stop to that.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, that's kind of some of the talk that may be available out there to save some taxes and strategies that might be used to take advantage of that deduction.
Gotcha. So we don't know all of it yet by any stretch. But
oh, gosh, no.
But boy, and you know, and we'll talk about the C Corp, that kind of game coming up a little bit, because I think some people out there are thinking about that. I've seen a lot of literature written about it, that, hey, you could set up a C Corp and help yourself. We'll touch on that in a little bit. But it seems that this has been fairly well thought out for avoiding tax avoidance. so far?
I think so. I think they've thrown some good bones out there too. Like, for example, the child credit on the lower end, they've doubled that. They've made more refundable, so they bumped it from a child under the age of 17, $2,000 credit with $1,400 of that being refundable. So, and then on the upside, they put limitations in, and they've also subjected those. There's a penalty provision out there that now throws it under the accuracy-related provisions, which means if you're not playing by the game, which means paying reasonable comp, doing all the things we were supposed to be doing before,
right,
and trying to kind of find a loophole, I think they've done a pretty good job, what I've seen, to kind of prohibit that from happening.
Gotcha. Good. Okay, so again, maybe this is not the right thing to ask of a CPA, but from your perspective, is this a budget busting thing or is this an economic boom thing?
Well, for my opinion is it's an economic boom thing, because I think what you're going to see is that, and I was working on a return last night that was in that 130, 150 range of income. And looking at 18 and what they're going to need to do compared to 17, there's about a $2,000 reduction in tax, which, you know, that could be a $200 additional, you know, net into their monthly take home. So for me, I'm thinking that that's going to be extra money that can be spent. And whether that's vacation, a new toy, something that they've gone long without, and they're feeling that it's upbeat, it's positive, everybody's in, you know, saying, hey, this is a good thing, that along with the corporations doing their $1,000 bonuses and their increases.
Hundreds of them are doing that.
Yes.
It's crazy.
It's incredible. And so I think that I call it a trickle down, but that's all going to come back to us exponentially. Mm-hmm. And I think that also adds to the positive feelings that are out there with the economy, the market's doing well. And so the so-called soothsayers, give the guy a chance and maybe we can change some things positively.
Yeah. This is it's an interesting bill to me. And we're not even touching on economically what would continue to happen, which has happened for as long as I can remember, and that is jobs going overseas to better tax havens. And they really have to. And now that has stopped. So we're not even talking about we're all talking about the positive effect that we can measure. Mm-hmm. But part of it also, in my mind, is we are now stopping this negative effect that continues to put a drag on our economy as jobs disappear. They're not going to disappear anymore. And we may even get some of them back.
Oh, I agree with that. And as we talked about earlier, is that, you know, regarding Apple, for example,
yeah,
the offshore money's coming back in. They're tremendous amounts of dollars. And so that's all going to be infrastructure, things that are going to keep jobs here in the United States.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I saw this analogy to the what Apple's doing. Now, remember, again, Apple is one company. This isn't right. Collective of what Google's going to do and Amazon and IBM and all the others that sell products globally. We're talking about multiples of this number. But one company is going to invest $350 billion over the next 5 years. The Marshall Plan, of course, the rebuilding of Europe, in today's dollars, again, we're not, of course, that was ages ago. Well, we're talking about inflating it to today's dollars was $140 billion. One company, $350 billion. Multiply that by a minimum of three times. Maybe five is the economic. Maybe it's 10, because we're talking about 20,000 new jobs as well. We're talking about one company making a $1 trillion impact. That is real. That's a multiplier effect.
Yeah, it's again positiveness. It's allowing that to happen, which we didn't have before. There wasn't a vehicle to say, "Hey, I want to bring that much in at 35%."
Right. Yeah, because we won't.
Exactly.
In fact, Apple and others were borrowing money to operate here to keep the money overseas.
Right.
It was terrible, and their expansion plans were overseas. Now it's back in the United States.
Yeah, what's interesting about those larger companies, you know better than I, but they're diversified too. It isn't just their technology. They invest in many other things, and get startups off the ground and so forth and so on. So, yeah, I see it being a good boom for our economy.
Exactly. Now, many people have said that the tax, the $1,000 bonuses and things like that that people have. But, you know, you and I deal with real people. And so, yeah, I'm sure for the people that make $1 million in the media, millions a year, $1,000 doesn't change their life at all. And they can poo-poo it. But real people, this is real money, and they're going to spend it, aren't they?
I think they are. I think any time that you have some extra discretionary monies, me as a conservative wants them to put it into their retirement accounts, right?
Yeah, but right, right.
We know a portion of that may happen, but they go out and they spend it.
Yeah.
And rightfully so, because there's been a long period of time of high costs and negativity and not really feeling like you can go out and spend your money. And I think now you're starting to feel the opposite of that.
Right, right, right. And that's interesting. We should talk about that a little bit more and dive into that, because that's one of those things that we talk about and we just kind of brush over. Business confidence is at all-time highs. That's huge. That's people that have money deciding whether they're going to expand, feeling confident to expand, to spend money on capital equipment, which is just a huge multiplier through the system. They got to go buy it from Caterpillar. And then, so they've got to work their lines and pay overtime. And then those guys are going to go to the local restaurant because they got a big fat check and go have some fun or buy a new razor. And then it goes over again, right? All right. We got to take a quick break, Dave, and we will be right back. Hello and welcome to the special edition of Money Matters. I'm Dave Petzo, of course. I'm here with Dave Hutchison with HH & Associates here in Boise. And again, for full disclosure, my accountant as well. And Dave, thank you again for the great job, I mean it, that you guys do on my taxes.
Appreciate that. Thanks,
appreciate the advice. I really do. I mean, it's one of those things that you think of tax preparation and you think of accounting. And again, this isn't a commercial about you guys at all. We all want your expertise, but it is impressive when you have people that are actually there thinking about it. And it's always been one of my things that I've been very adamant about in accounting that is a problem. Why am I, as a financial advisor, not in accounting, having to come up with all the tax planning ideas? And the tax preparers are just preparing after the fact without any thinking going forward. Okay, we prepared your taxes, and here's a problem. We got to do something about this coming up the next year. That has not been. But you guys do that, and I just don't see that, broadly speaking. Why is that?
You know, Dave, I'm not sure. I think every industry has its, what I would call its sour apples or black eyes, you know, anywhere from life insurance industry to the financial to accountants. And I think there's a lot to be said for the differences between compliance versus actually being a tax planning proactive thinker.
Mm-hmm.
And to get into that, it's hard. You have to keep up. You have to read. I find myself reading more than I've ever done in the past. And it's really hard to keep up with. And I think that on top of everything else you're expected starts to weed the group out. And so you just have to be careful. If you want compliance work, there's a market for it. Just here's my stuff, get my tax return done. Or how do I achieve benefits? Where do I go? Where are they? Has anybody looked into that? As simple as not paying your state tax prepayment,
yep,
and ending up in alternative minimum tax. Now, that's a simple one. But as you get in and start, as this new law will force a lot of us to do, is to reevaluate every situation, especially with small business, and determine the appropriate way to go. And that takes thinking ahead of just doing a compliance on the tax returns.
Good point. Good point. Yeah, I guess you're right. It doesn't matter what the industry is. It's people are going to work hard at it. And most people don't.
I agree.
They just don't. They just don't. All right. I want to talk about this on the business side, if you will. Do we set up C corporations? Do we set up multiple entities? We touched on it a little bit in the first segment and how they have this nailed down. But maybe because I'm reading a lot of things, I know that means everybody else is reading a lot of things about you should look into a C corporation, things like that. So let's do the hypothetical C corporation, because you mentioned the numbers earlier. The 20% deduction only applies to the first $300,000 to $400,000 for a joint tax return to get that deduction as a pass-through. For those larger businesses, more successful, their numbers are higher and they don't get that deduction. So we're talking about C-corps. Can that work?
The 20% deduction doesn't apply to C corporations, but what does apply to C corporations is the flat 21%. Mm-hmm. There used to be some exclusions, as people that are in personal service businesses will attest to. They were stuck with a flat 35%. No, they're 21% now as well. Now, everybody, my phone started ringing December 20th, the day that thing was signed in.
And yeah, I think I was one of them.
I'm going to a C-Corp. No, you really need to evaluate it, because there's a reason why Congress picked 21% flat rate. And if you think about it, the C-Corporation is its own filing entity. And therefore, you pay 21% there, but you still have your salary or your dividends. And as you get that, because you have to pay a reasonable comp still, mm-hmm. out of it. So you got wages for sure, and
when
dividends.
We talk about reasonable comp, let's break that down a little bit. I can't, let's just use exaggerated numbers, but you can't make $1 million through your business and declare only a $50,000 salary on yourself. Is that
correct?
What you're saying?
Yeah. There's calculations and industry standards and guidelines put out by the IRS, the tax courts, and so forth that we follow to come up with that range of what's acceptable and a reasonable method and amount. But taking that all into consideration, you still have your individual rates combined and averaged with the flat 21%. Mm. So it may not make a lot of sense for a lot of the small businesses to jump to C corporations. I'm not saying they shouldn't. I'm just saying you're going to have to go through the calculations, because if you do jump, you may actually be paying 39% versus 37% that you would have paid as a flow-through entity. So it's something that needs to be evaluated from all the facts and circumstances. So,
are there any other advantages to a C corp?
C corporations were set up to take on growth, volume, benefits, structurally protect themselves, protect, you know, there's risk protection involved with it. If you're doing a C corporations for those reasons, that makes sense, not just for tax purposes. Mm. If you jump to the bigger companies, like you, okay, let's talk about Apple again.
Sure.
Just a large company. 21%, everybody's high-fiving everybody. Because they do. They already have their compensation levels by the people they've hired, and they're already maxed out and paid. They're just paying it. Now they can do extra dividends because they're not having to pay income taxes. They can do bonuses. They can increase wages. They can provide infrastructure. So for those guys, that's what it was set up to do, and I believe that was the intent of that 21% rate.
Mm-hmm. Good, good. And then again, we got to remember the reason it's 21 and then back and higher is because you have to pay a dividend back out. And now
right.
You have personal taxes of 20% at the higher brackets anyway.
Correct.
Of that. So totaling, like you said, 30 more than the highest 37%. So well thought out by the bad guys that do the tax rules. Well thought
right.
out. Can't really figure out how to get around that one real easily. All right. So let's touch on real estate a little bit, because a lot of people do own real estate, and I know they've had some changes there. So what's going on with real estate?
I think one of the ones was the 1031 deferral exchanges. That had an implication that they said only real property could be traded now. That kind of eliminates your car trades and things you could defer before to not have to recognize that recapture on ordinary income from depreciation expense and other assets. Real estate in general, they have been pretty much the same, other than the rules that we're talking about as far as that trader business. It has to meet that activity. So there's been some depreciation changes, but I think as I've kind of delved into the details a little bit, we have to be careful on that, because they refer back to this trader business. In other words, they are allowing some Section 179 on rental properties that have elevated themselves that you are materially participating in a trade.
Okay, Section 179.
Being a first-year write-off of, like, you buy a tangible asset, like, for example, a refrigerator, you could just write it off.
The whole thing off.
Yeah, instead of having to depreciate it over 5 years.
Okay.
That kind of scenario. But you have to meet that trader business level. Otherwise, you're still under the old rules.
Not a passive, I just own rentals and collect income.
Correct.
Gotcha. Yep. Okay. Okay. Well, that's a fairly significant difference. How high a bar is that to declare that I mean, do I have to manage my own property? Is that what?
Yeah, it's a high bar. It's a high bar. Usually, and it's a highly contested area. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of auditing going on in that area right now. It's basically to be a material participation, you got to meet 500 hours on that activity. So if you have one rental property and you are not able to aggregate all your rental properties into mm-hmm. one activity, it's very difficult to meet that standard.
Okay.
And then when you go to the real estate professional standard, it's 750 hours and you spend more than half your time in real estate trades or businesses. That's another hurdle that's hard to get to unless you're really invested in it full time.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So, yeah. Okay. So there are advantages, but you have a lot of rules to follow.
Typical.
Very, very typical. All right. Well, when we come back, let's talk. We kind of covered the brackets to a degree of what the maximums are, but how many brackets do we have now? And we should talk about capital gains and all. And we're going to take a quick break here for Fox News. When we come back, we're visiting here, of course, with David Hutchison with HH & Associates. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome to a special edition of Money Matters. I'm, of course, Dave Petzo, and I'm here with David Hutchison with HH & Associates, talking taxes, because this is an incredibly exciting time. We haven't seen anything like this since Ronald Reagan's time, and we've had the most antiquated, I know you've heard me just rant and rave about how stupid our corporate tax structure was, how it was destroying jobs and growth in this country. In the name of figuring out how to take more from productive companies and then give it to unproductive government. But it doesn't work that way because then companies move, and they moved like crazy over the past few years. Well, here we are. We are now coming down in our tax brackets. We're middle range, aren't we, globally now? We're not really the lowest by any stretch.
I don't think we're the lowest. No, but we brought ourselves to be competitive.
Yeah. Yeah, we are competitive, and that means businesses can stay here where we have low energy costs. We have we're the Saudi Arabia of natural gas. If you're a producer of stuff, we have good environmental laws. We have we have rules of law. Well, sometimes the bad guys are, or the good guys are bad guys. We're finding out with the FBI these days that maybe things are a little more corrupt than we thought in our country. But generally speaking, corporate law is corporate law. The laws are good here, and you know what you're getting into, and businesses want to be here where the good infrastructure could be better, but those types of things. This is a big deal.
And I think it's being promoted that way too. I think as you kind of watch, even though I don't want to get political here, but President Trump has taken his march and given some speeches in Europe and so forth, and promoted that they're seeing the market, the positive, the upside, and what's happening. And I think other countries are starting to evaluate their own taxing situations again too. So it's a competitive battle.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it is, but now they're not just disappearing to Ireland because they've got no choice.
Correct.
Now we have a more competitive situation, and we already saw, like we've talked a couple times now about Apple coming out early, and this is no Trump supporter. Apple's not a Trump supporter. It's just a company that is, going to move and have a $350 billion by themselves economic impact. And the multiplier effect is huge. 20,000 jobs. It's going to be huge. And so this is just the beginning. It's an exciting time.
Yeah, I think you're seeing it. I think my clients, that they're all doing well. They're all making strides forward. That some are expanding, some are hiring. There's just a whole lot of positive in the air right now. We still have some big hurdles to get over. I mean, we still have our healthcare system.
Sure.
You look at individual rates this last year, I think they climbed 40%, at least on most.
Yep.
And so I think there's still some big hurdles to get over, but I think we're slowly making strides.
I hope so. I hope this momentum continues and continues with some of the other projects they're working on.
Absolutely.
This may be the kick that we need, kick in the pants we need. Now, let's talk about some of the things that are not talked about that are big economic drivers, though, and that's the expensing of capital equipment and all. That's changed massively, has it not?
Yeah. They've actually added a bonus depreciation, which is again, before the Section 179, which is where you could write off up to now $1 million, but that may be a moot point. The problems that are going to come in is with the business loss limitations. There's some rules there that we have to be careful of that are new. There's still a lot of guidance coming out, but for example, bonus depreciation was before Section 179, so in essence, if we got 100% write-off on any tangible equipment that you buy for a business, to the extent that it doesn't create a loss that's limited, that's pretty bold for people to say, hey, I don't have to worry about my 179 limitations and taxable income limitations. I can go out and buy these and expense it right away. So, yes, that's a significant change in the bonus depreciation. That used to be 50% only.
Okay, 50% of the taxable income, you mean? Or
50% of the basis, the cost basis.
The cost basis, okay.
Correct.
So you'd have to write off over a couple years instead of one.
Right.
Okay. Does that make a huge impact? Are there enough businesses out there that want to buy more than $1 million? Do you think that's going to make an impact?
I just think it is knowing that I can go out, and if I spend, I can get a tax write-off if I buy that piece of equipment or that desk. Or even on the real estate side that we touched on a little bit before, tenant improvement types, they've redone a whole new definition on improvements for that. There used to be three. I'm not going to get into all those because it's pretty complicated and what you have to go through. But you can take, you know, immediate write-off on that because that property is deemed to be 15-year property, which would qualify for bonus depreciation. So I see that being a benefit that if I'm going to write for a dollar, it's like I get an expense for it.
Sure.
And I don't have to worry about it.
You know, this is kind of a esoteric part of this discussion, but when we're talking about you don't have to worry about this, it brings up something in my mind. I want to run this by you for comment. Because what we're talking about or arguing before the tax bill was, well, most U.S. corporations aren't at a 36% bracket because they've got all these deductions and all these other things going on. And so there's really not going to have that huge an impact. But one of the things that strikes me and what you're saying there, too, is that I, as a business person, just go about acting normal. In other words, I can, if I think it's time to go expand and buy a bunch of capital equipment, I can write it off. I don't have to figure out a depreciation schedule. I just go act on what is right for my business, and I act in a normal way. I don't need 100 accountants at GE to try to figure out and circumvent laws, which we now see are blowing up in their faces. GE may not even survive because of all the stupid accounting games that they played. Now, to me, this is an economic driver when business acts normal. Capital gets allocated correctly. And again, I know it's not a number we can put on things, but do you think that that's going to have an impact economically for the whole United States because businesses act normal?
I believe so, because I think one of the stories and articles that I looked at was, I think it was either Sachs or J.P. Morgan, that they're cleaning up their balance sheet from 2008. Okay, why are they doing that? Well, the tax law changed, so they got to get back to normal operations. They have to get back to doing business as business should be done. So they've got to recognize that on their 17 return because of the loss limitations that happen on their 18 returns. So it's forcing that to be cleaned up, which I think is a good thing. Kind of to your point is, you know, when we're buying assets and we're spending this money and doing it, we shouldn't all be based upon, you know, taxes. Is it the right, prudent business thing to do? And can I make more money?
Right, right.
So, I agree with what you're saying. I think there's a lot of truth in it. And you see it not only at the higher level, but I think as my clients come in and they start to get adequated to this new tax law, we're going to be having the same conversations.
Right, right. And it does. The tax rates are still high. They still are very high in this country. There's no question about that. It's not that we aren't paying taxes. But the idea in business now that people are acting in a normal way, what's the best economic benefit instead of what's the best tax benefit? How can we hide more money somewhere right. under a rock that doesn't help the economy grow? People acting normal is much more predictable as well.
Yes.
For people. If I'm expanding my business and I produce something that people might want to buy, I'm not only selling capital equipment when, say, farm prices are good because somebody needs a deduction. Maybe we're doing it for only economic reasons that it's time to replace.
Right. And again, time will tell as we go through it.
Sure, and we don't know. All of this is dynamic. When we talk about dynamic testing, it's not possible to know what's going to happen down the road. But the idea that we are greasing the wheels of industry in a positive way, we're greasing the wheels to stay here and create jobs in America, all of these things we know are going to help the economy. We just don't know how much.
Right.
And so this idea that we're going to have a trillion and a half. Okay, when we come back, I want this number. What is this? What is this supposed to be? The deficit? We're supposed to. Is this a trillion and a half dollar deficit over the next 10 years? I'm reading 500 million or billion. Excuse me. Sorry. Just a little small change difference. And at the same time, I'm doubting it's going to be anything if the economy grows as it is already. We got to take a quick break here. David Hutchison with HH & Associates. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome to this special edition of Money Matters. I'm Dave Pezzo, of course, and I'm here with David Hutchison with HH & Associates. And again, for full disclosure, my accountant as well. And I've been with many accountants, Dave, so thank you. I really appreciate how professional and forward-looking in your planning you guys are.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. It's just it's a refreshing change.
It's nice to hear.
It is. I know. It is good. You guys work hard at it, and I appreciate that. Hey, let's get back to the taxes here. We were talking here before the last break about the economic, the real tax economic impact here. In other words, the deficit that everybody's saying. We're going to blow a hole in the deficit. Now, I realize that this is, okay, so here's my political aside here, that it's totally okay that Obama spent $10 trillion in deficits, increased the deficit $10 trillion. But if we're talking about a trillion under Donald Trump, that's unacceptable.
Right.
At taking a shot at growing the economy. It already has. You and I were talking about this. The economy has already picked up in anticipation of better economic, a better economic agenda. Have you seen any numbers? Are there any numbers floating around about how much the economy is picking up already? Or is that still to come?
Dave, I think it's still to come because there's a lot of things. Obviously, we can see the market wealth growth off that. That's going staggering. But the filtration of this still has to happen. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of details and understanding of how that's going to impact the overall. But I think we've hit the GDP growth, I think, is far out exceeded the 3%. And can this extrapolate that into more? And I think it will, but I haven't really seen any numbers on that, how big that could be. And those numbers have yet to be seen.
Yeah, I think that one of the things with an economy is the size of the United States growing an extra 0.5% or 0.75% or whatever because of this type of a legislation, a tax legislation, less regulations, whatever it is that causes that, is such a huge number of increasing the economy and therefore increasing tax revenue. We'll wait and see. But this is something that they just won't test for and they won't talk about as if this had a big hole. But this is we're growing so much faster now.
No, I agree. I mean, it's back to our comments earlier is, you know, the reinvestment back into America. I mean, it's huge. And the trickle down, the bonuses, the trying to get the way, they're all starting to happen as it's been projected to. Now, what are the results of that going to be? Again, is yet to be seen as it plays out, but it's all starting in the right direction.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about, have they changed the number of brackets and little things like that? And also, and let's talk capital gains as well, because there are some changes there. The brackets have been reduced, right?
Yeah, the brackets have been reduced. They haven't changed in number. Okay, they're still the seven brackets.
Okay, okay.
But what they've done is they've gone from 10% up to 39.6%. They've changed to 10% up to 37% on the individual side.
Okay.
Okay, now what's happened, the big change is the top bracket was 450,000. The top bracket now is 600,000.
Okay.
So those dollar marginal brackets have expanded.
That's a big jump, actually. That's a 40% jump in size of that bracket.
Yeah, and that's where when we're talking about the middle class,
yeah,
they've been expanded. So I think that's going to help bring it down some.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you're getting that feedback from me, is that's going to be anywhere from, you know, a few thousand dollars in tax savings, maybe not the huge jumps that you're expecting, because what they've done after expanding the brackets is they put limitations on things like the taxes on your itemized deductions, the total amount for state and real estate capped at $10,000.
Right.
That's going to affect that spread in brackets to help keep things contained.
Right. Right.
So, and getting rid of miscellaneous itemized deductions, the 2% limiters, the people out there that were getting weren't getting reimbursed,
yep,
and they were spending business expenses for their employers, they're going to want to get reimbursed now.
Right, exactly. Yes, they are. And I think businesses will be more likely to do that too.
Yeah, I think
they probably will. There's no break there, and then business taxes are going down, so it is a big advantage.
Right.
As we've talked endlessly, hundreds of companies have already sent out bonuses and increased wages already.
Right.
Already. So it's a big, big economic boom. Now, when we're talking about capital gains, though, are those brackets the same, and dividends, qualified dividends, are those brackets basically the same?
They're basically the same, Dave. They've come away from being tied to the marginal brackets to their own set of marginal bracket system, but we still have the 0%, which runs from 0 to 77,200 taxable income. Then you still have the 15%, which is 77 to 479,000, and then the 20% above that. We still got the capital gains rates, that 0% calculation, but they haven't expanded those as greatly as they have the marginal brackets.
Okay. Now, not much movement there. How about let's talk about on the lower end, because I at least what I was reading, that there are now more taxpayers that are going to pay zero. Is that a correct statement?
I'm not sure where that's coming from. I've seen the postcard.
Okay.
I saw it held up by all the different congressmen. I've yet to see where that's going to be applicable.
Okay.
So until that really comes to attrition, I don't think that's viable.
Well, no, I don't mean the postcard part. I mean not paying taxes. I mean, in other words, the first X amount of dollars that people, you know, if a family of four makes less than $70,000 a year, they won't pay taxes, and maybe the number was